This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Dan Youngst of OutSystems, and we're talking about low-code.
Hey, Ian. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. Yes, as you said, I'm with OutSystems, which is one of the leading low-code application development platforms, helping enterprises develop applications faster, really driving digital transformation.
What is low-code?
That's a great question. Low-code is something that's fairly new on the market, especially in terms of that terminology. It's a cloud application platform that allows you to build applications and deploy them and run them in a scalable, elastic cloud environment. But the key is that the way you develop the applications is using a visual modeling interface on the front end. So developers work in an IDE that allows them to visually model the application. They essentially drag and drop the components of the application, connect them together, press a button. Then we have automation technology, which actually writes the code for the application and stitches it all together underneath. So that allows you to really build applications much faster than in the old way of manually writing code and editing code in an editor and debugging and all that kind of stuff.
Over the years, we've had whole attempts to speed code up. We've had model-driven development, which itself was a visual-based thing. We had object orientation back in the 1980s, which was going to just allow us to take a block of components and quickly stitch together to produce things. One of the challenges for those environments in the past has been actually delivering, and delivering at scale, delivering at the low cost, and delivering on the promises made. How is low-code changing that and being the actual delivery model?
The advantages we have now is 20 years of history in software development and improving software development over time, and also improving the hardware that runs underneath in terms of becoming faster and faster, you know, Moore's Law and all that. What that's allowed us to do is really get to a much more optimized way to create the code once you've built the visual model, you know, using really smart, intelligent automation technology to actually write the code. So it's much more advanced than it was 15 years ago when people were doing RAD tools and that kind of stuff. But it's also now a full platform, so you can actually quickly build the application, then deploy it, and then use a DevOps approach to move it from development to test to production and have it running live in production in a fairly automated way.
What does the automation bring to this in terms of understanding the user and understanding the whole environment in which they're working?
A couple things. One is it's a great way to essentially rapid prototyping. With this visual modeling, you can design an application and get a prototype of it up and running very quickly in a matter of a week or so, right? So then you can go to your business users and say, hey, was this what you had in mind? And they can give you feedback. In fact, they can, with our technology, they can give you feedback in the application. They can write on it and say, no, I want this button moved here. And then it comes back to the developers to do that. That's one thing that the automation gets you, is just the speed of getting ideas to market as applications. The automation that we have built into the technology also allows you to do really more advanced things, like very easily incorporate RESTful APIs that may be calling a machine learning API on IBM Watson or something like that. The platform is really powerful. It has almost everything in it that you could do with handwriting code. All the different types of function calls are there and everything. But then you can have higher level business objects in the platform that you're going to just reference as reusable objects. Maybe a microservice that you built to solve some function, you can use that in the next application that you build. By having this whole framework and this whole platform, you to incorporate everything from web-based SOAP calls to microservices you're using to internal business applications, other APIs that you've built internally, gives you just a lot of power and capability to build full enterprise class business applications.
That throws up two questions to me. The first is, if point where the developer gets involved has always been a tricky one. We had it with rapid application development. We've had it with earlier model-driven development, because a user sees the assembly quite quick. But then by the time the developer's got into the back end and they've added those extra little bits of code and they've made sure everything is optimized, historically that's taken quite a long period of time. How are you maintaining the speed of development here?
Really, the difference is the rapid prototyping tools of old were really just for creating prototypes. The applications hit walls, they wouldn't scale, they weren't elastic, they didn't have the security that you needed. And that's true still today for some of the what they call no-code tools. So the tools that are designed to create just very simple business applications, maybe a CRUD application for reading and writing data from a database. Those kinds of tools and the tools of yesterday just really hit the walls when you needed to scale it out. But the new modern low-code platforms like OutSystems really allow you to take that same visual modeling approach, but then when you press the button to build the application, it's actually writing out real enterprise-grade code underneath, running it in full enterprise-grade platforms with security and with scalability. It's a cloud platform, so it's elastic and scalable as well. Just that kind of advance in technology that I think that allows us to do that, because cloud has come along and a lot of other microservices are here and containers and everything else. So that's allowed us to take advantage of that to build true enterprise-grade applications.
The second question that your early answer brought to mind was, how do we get the users to select the right objects? It's very easy to say, there's 217 components in here. If you throw 217 components on a screen at a user, as we saw with desktop publishing early on, somebody will want to use all 217 in some way or fashion, which of course doesn't work, it doesn't scale, it just makes a mess. In addition, they may not quite know what objects it is they want to pull together to create what they think they need. So how do you guide them through this without almost sitting a developer next to them?
Like any technology platform, there's training that comes along with it. You really need to be able to introduce people to the platform and walk them through a training program. We have one-week Kickstarter training programs to get people up to speed very quickly. And so that guides them in the right direction, introducing them to the most commonly used objects and components. We also have in our documentation, we have best practices baked in. So if the customer wants to do a certain thing, the best practices will tell them the best way to do that. So, and that's based on the experience that we've seen in other customers who have been using the platform. One of the things that people talk about when they talk about low code and even more so around no code is this notion of a citizen developer, where you're going to take some random business analyst and put him in front of this tool and he's going to magically come up with this great business application. There's a small use case for that, but what we see actually much more often is a low code platform like this actually being used by professional developers in the IT organization because they understand software development, they understand programming and all the constructs that are used in that, and so they can much more quickly build an application with the visual modeling because they know how programming works. They know how to lay out the architecture. They will adopt it because it really makes their life better. They can move much faster in terms of building applications and in terms of cutting down the backlog that they have in terms of requests coming from the business. They can move faster building applications and make IT more of a business partner with the business. In some cases, you may have certain business analysts that are savvy and proven that they understand software development to a certain extent. So the IT department may then give them permission to use the platform to work on their own. So we see a little bit of that, but mostly it's a platform used by IT to really knock down their own backlog and move faster.
That's an interesting resetting of expectation, because a lot of the hype in the last 2-3 years around low-code and no-code platforms has been that we won't be using developers for a lot of this. When you're talking with customers, how much does that reassure them that this actually is something that will scale for the enterprise, rather than the danger of everybody sitting around and not actually doing work, just trying to create something shinier on their mobile phone?
There is a kind of a misperception there in a lot of organizations, but when we go in and we educate them, and more importantly, when we show them what our other customers are doing, we have over 700 customers, and we talk about how they're using the platform and how it's helping them, then the light bulb really turns on. They get it. It's not just a tool to replace SharePoint. It's something to build real applications. It's not low-code versus the professional developers. It's actually low-code and professional developers. IT should be looking at the two together and how to use both of them to build the best and most powerful and fastest applications.
When we talk about those underlying components, we're bringing them together, we're clipping them together. How many of those at the moment are all developed by yourselves, and how many of those are coming from your ecosystem?
We have a good solid mix. So we certainly develop, and a lot of them are owned and fully supported as part of the platform. When you initially sign up and subscribe to the platform, you get a whole library of stuff included. But then we have the Forge, which you're referring to, which is our community repository, app store, if you will, of components that have been built by community members. And some OutSystems engineers work and develop components and put them into the Forge, but also a lot of our customers and a lot of our community members are building those. So I would say it's probably 50-50 right now in terms of the stuff that you get with the platform right off the shelf and then versus the additional stuff that you can get out of the Forge.
How are you going to curate the Forge? If I can give you an example, I was with the Jenkins team last year and this year, and over that period of time, they've taken the hard decision that they have a lot of things contributed to their project, but actually some of the developers have walked away, some of the projects never really went anywhere. It was very hard for users to understand what was still production quality, what had lost its way. And as a result, they went back, they looked at all these, they did a hard look. Some that were useful and more widely used, they persuaded other people to take on supporting. And it's always a challenge when you've got stuff being contributed by partners into a common area. Can you give us some view of what your curation process is and also your test process to make sure that these things are enterprise ready? Because again, if I'm looking at this with my enterprise hat on, I'm looking at components and going, I trust that because I know that's come from OutSystems. Do I trust that because it's come from somebody I don't know in the community?
We have I wouldn't call it policing, but we have a very vocal community and certain members of the community that are really very active in the Forge, and so they're always seeing the contributions, the discussion boards and everything on the Forge. So there's a lot of awareness that goes on in terms of making sure people understand when OutSystems is rolling out a new release of the platform, what maybe need to be changed in some of the Forge components and that kind of thing. Any application that's using a Forge component that is running on the platform when we roll a new release will be updated, and the dependency checking that happens with our kind of true change technology, we call it, will automatically identify components that maybe need to be updated as well with that version upgrade. That's a fairly automated way of flagging things that, you know, may need to be updated. And then we have the author information and can get back to them and tell them to update it. But it's really just more about having a living and healthy community, I think, people that are aware of what's going on and also staying on top of the contributions to the Forge. We have certain community members called MVPs who are very strong OutSystems advocates and know the platform inside and out very well. They're sitting at our customer sites working with the platform day in and day out. They're some of our best Forge contributors, but also best Forge liaisons as well.
Can you give some idea of projects that customers may have run in parallel in the early stages where they've gone from a traditional coding project to working with yourselves on what they've seen? First of all, in terms of initial time to delivery of the product, but also you mentioned dependencies there. And of course, that's always a nightmare in terms of support long term when something patches, is what is dependent upon it? What breaks if I change this component? And some idea then of the ability to carry that speed through the whole of the application lifecycle.
Yeah, that's a good question. One example that comes to top of mind is FICO, the company in the US that does a lot of credit management, credit approvals and everything. Fairly mature enterprise company, been around for a long time and been developing software. They had a platform for originating loans called Originations Manager. And they had an old legacy version that they were running, and they wanted to rebuild it. The older version had taken them like 2 years to write in Java. They actually started from scratch rewriting it on OutSystems, and they got it rolled out in, I believe it was like 4 months. So fairly dramatic improvement in terms of the amount of time that it took to get the new version out compared to the old version. So we see that all the time as a lot of times it's a 3-time speed up. Sometimes customers tell us, you know, they're 5 times faster. Those kinds of numbers save a dramatic amount of time and cost. And then the managing the applications on an ongoing basis, this true change technology is super powerful with that in terms of identifying the dependencies in the application. Whenever you change one microservice, then are you going to have to change the others because you changed the API that you're using, that kind of stuff. That saves a lot of time. I don't have any metrics off the top of my head in terms of what that's saving for customers today, but it's known to be something that just makes it a lot easier to use the tool on an ongoing basis.
One of the challenges, once we talk about mobile, is always the experience. And there's a lot of confusion as to whether user interface equals user experience, and actually it doesn't. Something can look very pretty and just be horrendous to use. You spend a lot of time speeding up the back end. How easy has that been, not only to change how your own people think about applications and delivery, but also to get customers to understand that this isn't just about making it look pretty. There's a whole functional set of controls here that have to be in place.
Yeah, I think that's a big challenge. Customers, they know they need a mobile app. They need, you know, the latest mobile banking functionality or whatever. But then they just think, oh, well, okay, we'll build a mobile app. They don't think about the usability of that application. What kind of menus are you going to have on it, or swiping left or right or whatever? It's part of like some of the best practices we put in the documentation. We have a lot of tutorials and videos online that show people how to do this kind of stuff. The Silk UI interface, which is our visual design interface for the user interface, is very powerful and has some good recommendation capabilities as well. We do the best that we can to help guide people in the right direction, but again, it's going to be up to the developers to adopt those best practices. We can't force them to create great user experiences, but we can give them the tools to do it. We do have a services organization, and we work with customers a lot in terms of coaching them and helping them build their first app, maybe, and things like that. We see customers being successful, but they do have to adopt that mindset of focusing on that as a challenge.
For a customer looking to get into the low-code world, what would be your first few pieces of advice to them?
Adopting a lot of new technology, you know, one recommendation is to start small. Start with one project and where you need to build a new application. Maybe it's an end-user consumer application or an internal digital operations. You need to replace a paper process or something like that. Bring in the platform for that. It's very easy to stand up quickly. You can use our cloud version or you can run it on-premise. Get that project team up to speed on it and make them successful. And then spread the news about that within the organization. Once you have proof that they're successful, then it's much easier to move to other project teams and get them onto the platform and move them onto the platform. You know, I think start small, but don't be afraid to tackle the bigger challenges as well. This platform can be used for very large critical systems as well as mobile applications and a variety of other types of applications.
Dan, thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thank you, Ian. My pleasure.